Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
It's true. When my brain was being flooded with testosterone, I thought about sex a lot. A lot. And when that's the overriding focus and you haven't been taught ways to cope with that, what does that lead to? It leads to you wanting to be extremely competitive, to beat other men so that you get the attention of women, or whatever it is that gets you your sexual satisfaction. And it also leads to, I think, greater amounts of deviance, because you can't deal with that sexual desire in ways that are socially acceptable. The point is that testosterone is so potent. It's so potent. And I think that very few people, except for researchers in that area and perhaps transgender people, really understand how potent testosterone is as a drug.
Well, hey there and hello. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. You are joining us today, part two, with our conversation with Danielle Trollo. She is a stand-up comedian here in Duluth. And she also makes her way around the country, so keep an eye out for that or invite her there yourself. If you are starting in part two, I highly suggest checking out part one. But if you want to dive into part two, you are absolutely welcome here. In our conversation today, we're going to dive into Danielle's experience growing up. And as you heard from the beginning quote, we're going to talk a little bit about testosterone. I think it is such an interesting conversation. I think there's so many things that we can learn from having conversations with folks who are trans. They have an experience that, as I've said before, can speak from multiple angles that most of us are just never going to get the opportunity to do. And testosterone is one of those. And so I think it's a great conversation and it's worthy of paying attention to and listening to and thinking about the benefits we can gain in our culture from having these conversations. So that and a lot more. I want to mention up front the event that is happening November 9th at 5 o'clock. At Wusso's Concert Cafe, and you might be familiar with them under the name Beaners. They just recently changed their name. Looks like there are still tickets left, and they are $10 and $15. So that is going to get you a 5 to 10 p.m. evening of comedy and music, for which Danielle will be performing, so you can check her out live and in person. And before we dive into our conversation, I want to thank you so much for listening and sharing the podcast via Facebook and email, getting Danielle's word out there and all the other people who have been on the podcast and sharing their skills and perspective and helping people find information and practitioners that may inspire their life and well-being. So thank you for doing that. I have been so fortunate to have such amazing people that have let me sit down and talk to them and share what they do. And let's fling them far and wide. And also, of course, a huge thank you to all of you who have supported on Patreon, who support each month. You can become part of the Patreon community, the Wellness Renaissance Patreon community, for just $1 a month. And you get some extra goodies. We are going to get some additional pieces of Danielle's interview up there. I'm not quite sure if it's going to take the form of the full interview, and we'll let you know where the new and unique spots are, or if I'm just going to put those up there. We'll see. So give me a little bit of time to do that, but definitely take a look for it. And if you would like to hear more, check out the Patreon page in a few days and you can join on up and you will be able to listen to those as well. And you can, of course, find the Patreon page and sign up for emails at the podcast website, which is wellnessrenpodcast.com. Again, that's wellnessrenpodcast.com. Check out the other titles and see what other ones spark your intrigue. And I do want to mention this because it does come up occasionally. If you are on the podcast website, the wellnessrenpodcast.com website, and you look at a title, if you click on the title, you will get a whole new page that gives you show notes, gives you an idea of what we talked about and all of the contact information. So I occasionally run into folks who don't know that, So if you're not familiar with listening to podcasts on the website, there you go. All right, I think that's all the housekeeping stuff. Let's head on into our conversation with Danielle. Enjoy. You were assigned male at birth.
Mm-hmm.
And you at some point started figuring out, this doesn't feel good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to live through that, mm-hmm. you know, live through that process of how mm-hmm. do you process through that all your life.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, I remember in elementary school and high school, I remember thinking, every boy must feel the way I feel. That every boy feels like they're female, but they're just better at dealing with it than I am.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I went out for football in ninth grade because it was expected of me. And I played football in high school until from ninth through 11th grade before I figured out that I just was making a horrible mistake. I mean, I knew pretty quick, but I don't like to give up on things. And my dad liked that I was in football. And so I didn't want to be a quitter. But I would see these guys and I'd be like, wow, they're good at being men. Why am I not good at it like that? And then I would get teased a little, quite a bit. But I just thought, you know, I'm just not good at it yet. I need to just get better at it. I need to practice harder. I need to lift weights. I need to do things to make myself much more masculine. And then I will be a man and I will not want to be a woman. Or I'd be able to deal with this fact that I feel like I'm a woman, like they're all able to deal with it. And finally, I just said, you sit down with some of your closest friends sometimes and you say, you know, well, I mean, there must be some point where you feel like you're a woman, right? And they're like, what? No. What? And they're like, no, I didn't. I'm just speculatively thinking. You don't mean that. I'm just joking. Ha, ha, ha.
Right?
And you're like, oh, something's weird here. And so, you know, then I go to the library and you start to research it. And then at that time period, back in the 70s and the 80s, the only thing you can find on the topic is in sexual deviation textbooks, which are the same theories and thoughts that many men and some women continue to harbor, that it is a mental illness or that it mm-hmm. is a sexual deviation, because for so many centuries it was, particularly in America.
Mm-hmm. Hardly seen that way.
It's not a mental illness. It's not a mental illness. I mean, a lot of people think it is a mental illness. It's not a mental illness. It's not in the DSM anymore. The only thing that comes along with the dysphoria is because society treats people that way. So the dysphoria is the fear of being treated by society in a very detrimental manner. That's where the dysphoria stems, the discomfort stems from. It doesn't come from inside. It comes from this outside. And it's not a mental illness. But if we even want to allow the thought of experiment that it is a mental illness, well, then let's treat it, okay? And let's treat it with a way that is proven to be medically successful, which is with surgery and integration. And if surgery is wanted, or with treating people in the way that they want to be treated. If you really want to think it's a mental illness, well, then how do you treat somebody with mental illness? Do you beat them up? Do you kill them? How you treat somebody with a mental illness? No, you treat them medically in a way that makes it so that they don't want to kill themselves or that other people don't want to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you take that mental illness route, but instead you get people using the mental illness route as like, and that is why they don't deserve to be part of our society or to have their opinions taken seriously, and it's why they should be ostracized.
Which, again, says a lot about our society and how mm-hmm. we treat people with
yes.
mental illness, yes. right? Like, it's so fascinating because so many of the things that come up with what you're saying teaches us a bigger picture that people will try to deny. And it's like, well, but here's a great example, mm-hmm. right?
The way we treat people with mental illness in our society is horrendous.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is.
And I happen to think
mm-hmm.
that voting for Trump is a mental illness. And so I feel like those people need treatment. You don't get anywhere by arguing with them or telling them that they're idiots and stupid or that they have no concept of reality, because they need to be treated like we would treat a dementia patient. You're right. There are systems that we have in place where we treat people with dementia, and they're kind. You know,
that's
like
true. That's true.
You engage in therapeutic fibbing, or affirmation and distraction. And I think affirmation and distraction work wonderfully for the Trump voter. I think if we used affirmation, I understand that you think that America should always come first at the subjugation of all other countries and or that women are second-class citizens. I understand that you think that. Look over there. It's a shiny bird. or some sort of therapeutic fibbing. Like, yes, I know that you live in that world. I mean, because the rational part doesn't work very well. Arguing the facts doesn't work. It doesn't work. Just like arguing the facts with a dementia patient doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it's hard because I want to hear people's perspectives. I want to understand what they're thinking. So anybody who's a Trump voter, you're welcome to help us along here.
When I see a woman wearing a "Please Grab My Pussy" and "Women for Trump," I just think, you poor thing, we need to help you. I mean, but how do you help them? I'm sure that there's a mental illness protocol that we can apply.
Well, but it is an interesting thing to, because again,
I'm going to get killed on.
But it brings up a kind of an interesting point, because there is the whole, your statement that you're saying is, oh my gosh, let me help you, where some of the Trump voters would look at a trans person and go, oh my God, let me help you, you know? And so it's like, well,
yeah.
How do we further both conversations?
Mm-hmm. And right? So, yes, and that's when I said it when we first started, is that I need to check myself, you know, am I the one with dementia? Am I the one who's not looking at the world in as clearly? And where I go to is my current guiding light that tries to keep me on the right path is, am I trying to make somebody less of a person or make them not have equal opportunity? Am I trying to help people live in a fairer society, or am I trying to maintain a position of authority and inequality? And that's kind of where I look as the guiding light. And my feeling in general is that people in minority situations are not being treated fairly, and we need to do what we can do to try to make things more fair. And my feeling is that the general conservative Republican viewpoint is, we are the chosen people and we know what's best, and what's best is you should be forced to marry someone who is of the what we classified at birth as the opposite gender, and once we assign you something at birth, you better stick with it or we're going to ostracize you. And to me, that's my guiding light, is that doesn't seem like the right course of action. And to have people in office who follow that viewpoint concerns me.
And rightfully so. Rightfully so. Well, and it's an interesting thing when you think about it, the whole, you know, assigned at birth, when, and just take the sort of the obvious, you know, the people who were assigned at birth male. And like, my mom knew a person who grew up and she grew breasts. And so she had a penis and she had breasts. Well, okay, but somebody assigned her as being male at birth. So how do you know what I mean? That wasn't a right decision. That was clearly not a correct decision.
No, it happens. And then you bring those up, and then the counterpoint is, as well, it's such a small percentage of the population that we can't possibly use that as a method for usurping our current status quo. I mean, just because a very, very few number of people have XXY, that does not delegitimize the fact that we are going to use genetics to put people into categories. Well, first of all, anytime we use genetics to put people into categories, that should be a big red flag to me. I mean, classifying people on their genetics, that sounds like a recipe for disaster to me. But then let's take the next step. It's actually not as... So then when I hear people talk like that, XX, you're a woman, XY, you're a man, And they make the comments, whether it's on Breitbart or on a subway or on a bus or standing on the sidewalk or in a political speech. And, I mean, how many of those people are geneticists? Not one, ever. Mm-hmm. No. So you're telling me that you're making this genetic assertion, but you have no idea about genetics. Because in reality, genetics goes far beyond the simple XXXY. You've got the phenotypes, in addition to genotypes. And so you can have a small variation on one of the branches of the gene that can have a tremendous impact. And then you've got hormones, and hormones are incredibly potent. And so, I mean, you could have somebody who's XY, but they are flooded with female hormones before they're born. What effect does that have? And what do you even know about it?
Right.
To come to this conclusion that, therefore, there's only two categories. Clearly, we are all very unique.
Right.
And these exceptions are not tiny. There's many of them. Many, 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 many. We're not talking about one or two people. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. And to belittle those people as a minority, and therefore all people should be treated, or particularly even those people, should be treated in a way that is completely prejudiced and misogynistic or harmful, is sad. And that's, again, where I look at that guiding light, is how do we treat the people who are less fortunate or who we've classified as a society as less worthy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anytime you want to start classifying people as less worthy of equal treatment, to me, that sort of leader should not be in office.
Well, and that can change over time as who those less worthy are.
Mm-hmm.
And because if somebody
mm-hmm.
decides, well, redheads are, you know, they're not blonde or brunette. What the heck are they doing here?
I'm getting a little tired of the ginger jokes, and I'm not a redhead. But I mean, you know, it's all fun and dandy. And I see so many comedians make the ginger jokes on stage. It's not funny anymore. It's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pick something else.
Not a fan of Tim Minchin's ginger song?
I don't have ever heard
it,
but it's a worn out trope.
Yeah. Well, it is. I've always been fascinated by where that even comes from.
Yeah, I'll tell you where I think it comes from, is that about 2% of the population is redhead, right?
Right.
Which is a very small part of the population, and therefore they're less powerful, and therefore we can beat up on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it probably starts from.
And do they beat up on themselves to sort of beat people to the punch?
Well, that happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens in transgender people too. It happens women. I mean, yeah. If you make fun of yourself, then it doesn't hurt as much when other people, it tries to take the stick out of the hand of the person,
mm-hmm.
but it still doesn't.
So is that, I mean, because that's in a sense what you could be seeing that you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of beating people to the punch and you're saying, hey, here I am. So like
mm-hmm.
you say, if you open the door for me, it's on you.
Mm-hmm.
You knew.
Mm-hmm.
Make your own decisions. I mean, I can imagine it's kind of a safety thing.
It is that too.
Yeah.
It is that too, because I don't know how often. I feel like generally when I'm, you know, going through a grocery store or walking through a Target, that nobody is concerned that I am transgender. I generally feel that that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But if I interact with somebody for an extended period of time, or sometimes some people are more perceptive and I still have masculine gestures and my voice is completely stereotypically feminine. And so those interactions can sometimes create a disconnect for some people that they get focused on. And then when people's vision of what they've expected starts to deviate from what's actually happening, different people respond to those situations differently. Some people like it. Some people like the novelty of a little surprise. It raises the endorphins in their brain and they enjoy the interaction more. But some people react completely differently and they consider it to be very threatening and disruptive, and then they need to engage in some sort of protective behavior. So when I'm walking through a grocery store, I don't broadcast that I'm transgender.
Right. Like, really?
Transgender at aisle 3.
Right.
Soon. Stand
Excuse
by.
Excuse me, transgender person here, just getting some Cheerios. It's all good.
But I do worry when I walk into a bar and a gentleman opens a door for me, not at that particular moment necessarily, mm-hmm. but a few moments later when their friends make fun of them or they figure something out and then they have to come reclaim their masculinity. Mm-hmm. By beating somebody up because that makes them powerful again.
Right.
So I do worry about that.
So I'm thinking of sometimes it's probably, you know, I can imagine when somebody's interacting with you and they sort of have this, things don't quite make perfect sense in mm-hmm. my head, mm-hmm. that I totally am, that some people are kind of going to freak out and they're just not going to mm-hmm. be able to concentrate well because
they have a little internal panic.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when you're having those interactions, how often do you think that sometimes it is not that they have a problem with you or that it's the discord, but it's the fear of saying the wrong thing or... Because in my mind, what we should be thinking is, oh, whatever, and continue interacting with you like you're a human being, right? Mm-hmm. That would be the logical course of action. Mm-hmm. But because we're all part of this culture that has mm-hmm. us freaking out a little bit and then maybe worried and wanting to not be disrespectful, you know, is that something you read on people and kind of try to put them at ease? And if somebody is in that situation, what thought can they think to just put themselves back together again?
Well, personally, I don't mind questions. So, I mean, if somebody is momentarily confused or they don't know what I would like to keep a situation comfortable, I don't mind a question.
Okay.
Now, to be fair, there are some transgender women who don't like questions.
Right.
And, in those situations, I guess, I mean, you know, you just focus on the human being as a human being. And I think that there are a lot of things you can do to learn about people by asking questions that anybody would appreciate talking about or knowing.
I did some work with the disability office at UMD, and we would go do panels and we would discuss disabilities. And we really threw it out there saying, ask a question, whatever the question is, no matter if you feel like you are saying all of the wrong words, it's just mm-hmm. fine. This is a great place mm-hmm. for that.
Yeah. How do you fix it if you don't talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, so if somebody asks me if I have a penis or a vagina or if I've had surgery, you know, I get to decide how far I want to go with that question and we can talk about it. Like, you know, you brought up drag and my brother, people confuse drag with being transgender, mm-hmm. and they're not at all related. I mean, the difference between a drag queen and a transgender person is as wide as the difference between a man and a woman. That's how different it is. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I meet people all the time, and they learn I'm transgender. They go, oh, I love drag shows. Like, well, okay, that's great. I'm glad you love drag shows, but what does that have to do with me? Mm-hmm. I mean, what they're kind of signaling is on one hand, they're open-minded. And on the other hand, they're also signaling that they, you know, I don't want to assume, but usually when I talk to them, what I've learned is that they think that transgender women are just really good drag queens mm-hmm. or more subtle drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the case. But that's not a bad, it's just you don't learn that and you don't have an opportunity to address that dichotomy unless it's actually talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my own brother said that, he said something about a drag queen. I said, well, there's a big difference between drag queens and transgender people. And he says, well, it's a fine line. I'm like, well, it's a fine line, like the difference between men and women is a fine line. and so, you know, and I don't think it completely sinks in, but he's I love my brother, and he's a great person, and we get along amazingly, and we have these discussions. But when you don't grow up in that environment, it takes time. It takes time to integrate it. And so I mean, and then I was out at a business meeting in another state, and I was leaving a party, and a woman came up to me. She was so excited to tell me that she loved drag shows. I mean, she just wanted to tell me that, and she wanted me to say, well, you must be a very good person. I mean, that's what she just wanted me to say, oh, well, I appreciate how open-minded you are and that you're accepting of me. even though I'm not a drag queen, mm-hmm. I appreciate it. That's what she wanted to hear. And so it would be so easy for me to get angry at that mm-hmm. with her. But she was trying to bond. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't. And so, you know, so what does it take at that point? It takes an extended conversation. And that's the problem with communication, is communication requires a tremendous amount of patience and listening. Mm-hmm. And humans want things done quickly, and they don't want to listen. They want to talk, usually.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're trained into sound bites.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's why my podcast is not short, because mm-hmm. I don't want to do the sound bites. Mm-hmm. I want deeper content than that, mm-hmm. right? Because it is about furthering that conversation. And I hope I didn't blur my concept when I mentioned drag and trans, because I...
No, totally, what I appreciate is that it brings up the opportunity to talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, well, and I'm sure for some people it is just people don't quite know how to... Again, we're all about categories. Mm-hmm. So if you see Boy George... And that's the only experience you've got, mm-hmm. and then you have a transgender. I'm mm-hmm. a big fan of Boy George, so that's why I keep using
and Boy
resource.
George to me. I mean, I remember Boy George in the 80s, mm-hmm. and I was still deep in the visual closet. I mean, I had only told a few people at that point, like my doctor, and
ooh, wow.
and I mean, almost nobody knew. Nobody uh-huh. knew at that point.
Right?
Then you see Boy George, and you go, "Oh, gender isn't necessarily." Need to be presented in one particular
right,
way.
Right.
But then that also confused me to a certain point, because then you start to think that gender is about clothing and appearance.
Right. And that's how our culture pushes it.
Yep. And mm-hmm. and that's my weakness too. I mean, I have that weakness because I grew up in that time period, and I like things that are classified as feminine, and I wish that they weren't classified as feminine.
Mm-hmm.
It's disappointing that when you look at what the definition of feminine is and the definition of masculinity and what is classified as feminine behavior or masculine behavior, I get concerned about that.
Right, that we can't just be
yes.
and do what we want to do
yes.
and like what we like. And
or that, I mean, feminine behavior and feminine things are classified so often as weak.
Yes, absolutely.
And you see it in sports so much, and it's just like, it's like you'll see a quarterback not play particularly well. In fact, I think Kirk Cousins 2 weeks ago, I heard people describe, well, he's like throwing like a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Really? Stop it. Just stop that. We don't need that. And these are people who are on public radio all the time.
Yeah. Well,
what's wrong with being a 12-year-old girl? And I mean, is it throwing like a 12-year-old, an experienced person? Is that your point, or is it because he's like a girl and girls can't? You know, if you're going to behave like that, why don't you just put on a pink frilly dress? I mean, how many times have I heard that? Just put him in a pink frilly dress if he's going to behave like that. So.
Yeah. One of the videos by a trans man who was talking about, you know, he said, I went from being strong for a girl to being strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is such a really good point, mm-hmm. is though we make those classifications and girls are always minimized and mm-hmm. less than and not appreciated for what
mm-hmm.
we, you know, women bring to the table just as human beings.
It's not necessarily an insult, although it can be, but sometimes it's a compliment to say a woman is a tomboy. But mm-hmm. the minute you call a boy a sissy, oof.
Yeah, not okay. Those
no.
are serious fighting words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then it's an interesting thing, and this is where some guys will say, this is where women have privilege. This is women's privilege. Women can be tomboys, and it's not so negative.
Mm-hmm.
You said something that I'm interested in, that you said something about that we're born with prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit, because it does get talked about that those are learned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious about your thoughts on that and how much of it that things are learned, but we also have this tribal mentality that is part of
mm-hmm.
of our making and mm-hmm. our beings.
Well, I don't, you know, it's only something I've read a little bit into, but so I could be wrong, and anyone who listens to this can certainly try to correct me, because I need to learn too. What I've read is that when you take babies and you put them in fresh newborn unsocialized babies, they tend to respond more positively to the other babies that look like them. And they play with those babies more, they smile more, they're happier. Now, some people would say, well, that's a justification of why the races should be separated or the genders should be separated. I think that's a reason why we need to work harder to train people, to educate people, that there's value in things that are different. And so those inherent prejudices, yes, they exist, and you can either amplify them or you can attenuate them.
Mm-hmm.
And I come down on the side of attenuation.
Right.
I think that diversity makes us stronger. I think diversity makes a society or a business or anything stronger. And that it is to our benefit to take those inherent feelings of favoring one group of people over another and trying to attenuate that. And it also comes into play tremendously with hormones. Testosterone and estrogen are very potent chemicals, and they affect the way people think, and they affect the way people behave, and they are tremendously underrated in that. And so when you take those brain responses to those chemicals and you amplify them, you create a situation that is really very sad, in my opinion. Or you can take a situation where you try to even them out and smooth them out and give people ideas of, just make people aware of how that affects their brain so that they can make responsible choices under the situation when it triggers what would normally seem to be a violent or submissive response.
It kind of gets me thinking of how we use the whole idea of, well, that's the way it always been. That's our chemical makeup. That's how we are.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then, but we are civilized.
Yeah.
And we use both of them at our convenience.
That's just locker room talk.
Right.
I mean, it's okay. That's, you know, yeah, sure. Men are going to be more aggressive because, you know, boys will be boys. There's a reason. So in Florida, you know, they've started putting these lightning detectors in the upscale communities. It can detect flashes of lightning like 10 miles away. This is true.
Okay.
And then these systems cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they're putting them in places on golf courses and upscale communities because Florida has more lightning strikes than any other state. And every year, 17 people in Florida are killed by lightning strikes. So we're spending a lot of resources to protect these lives. And that's good. I mean, if you can save one person, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what kills more people in Florida every year than lightning? Men. Men kill 1,000 people in Florida every year. And we don't have any male detectors that say, you know, man spotted in the area, please take cover. We don't do that. And so in Florida, you know, around any body of water, you'll see a sign that says, beware of alligators, or alligator spotted in this area, or please don't feed the alligators. And that's good, because every year in Florida, at least one person is killed by an alligator. So, you know, it's good that you don't just have to put up a sign. You take the precaution, you save a life. It's great. You know what kills more people in Florida every year than alligators? Men. Yeah, men kill 1,000 people in Florida every year. But we don't have any signs. You know, man spotted in the area. Please beware of the men. Please don't feed the men. I mean, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you knew that maybe if you're going to go to bed at night or in your tent, you should put your food up in a tree so that you're safe from, because, you know, you don't want it. Wait, that's for bears. I get confused. But that's good, too, because every year in this country, 3 people are killed by bears. So it's good to be safe with your food when you're out camping. You don't want to be killed by a bear. But you know what kills more people than bears? Cows. Cows kill more people. Cows kill 20 people in this country every year, so. But mostly they're in pens, because they only kill farmers. So maybe we should do that with men. So, yeah, so what's the point of that joke? I don't know, is that testosterone's potent, and we need to teach our children that testosterone is potent and it affects the brain and men are more aggressive. Instead of encouraging them maybe to be more aggressive, we should encourage them to be aware that testosterone has that effect. So that when you get in an argument with somebody, you don't pull out a gun and kill them. We have a different coping technique.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that. We put up signs for alligators and put up lightning detectors.
Right. So can you speak to that? Like, your brain,
mm-hmm.
How has your brain changed?
Oh, so much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So talk about that, because I think that's really a big piece.
There's no, I mean, the common joke is that you see that men think about sex all the time and that men think about sex every 5 seconds or every 17 seconds or whatever. I mean, the research differs a little bit, but the point is that men think about sex a lot. It's true. When my brain was being flooded with testosterone, I thought about sex a lot. A lot. And when that's the overriding focus and you haven't been taught ways to cope with that, what does that lead to? It leads to you wanting to be extremely competitive, to beat other men so that you get the attention of women, or whatever it is that gets you your sexual satisfaction. And it also leads to, I think, greater amounts of deviance, because you can't deal with that sexual desire in ways that are socially acceptable. The point is that testosterone is so potent. It's so potent. And I think that very few people, except for researchers in that area and perhaps transgender people, really understand how potent testosterone is as a drug. I mean, one thing we could do, again, like a social exchange program, I mean, you know, women could try injecting themselves with testosterone. The problem is that it's so potent that the effects are quick and fast. And so listening to people who are categorized female at birth but later transition and how they talk about their testosterone experiences would be an important learning mm-hmm. attribute.
I absolutely think we need to have more discussions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
By trans people.
If we suddenly come out and says, you know, we need to reduce the testosterone levels in men in order to reduce violence in our society, what would happen? Men would literally pick up their guns and shoot anybody who said that. You're going to reduce my testosterone and make me less of a man. So that's not the solution.
Right.
We would never get that solution. Right. So what we have to do is we have to teach people how to deal with the effects that we all live with of that potent chemical in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And the flip side is that women generally don't have those high levels of testosterone, and so it affects women differently in the ways that they tend to generally be, and whenever I speak in generalities, I always get concerned, but generally then women are less competitive and they're less violent. I mean, there's the statistics play it out. I mean, if you look at who does the violence, it's men. And so we can say, well, women can be violent too. Well, they're not at the same level. Every once in a while you get one, but to use that one as an example of to why it's all equal, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we deal with these facts that we are all human, we make mistakes, and we are affected by these chemicals in our brain that causes our bodies to pick up guns and create mass killings? We need to be able to teach men to deal with the influence of that testosterone chemical in ways better than we've been doing. I mean, I remember when I was at football, the 3 years I was playing football in high school, it's so silly. I mean, this is literally what they would say. You need to growl. And you'd be running in place, pumping your arms, going, arr. And then you'd turn to the right, and when you turn to the right, you're supposed to yell, kill. So it's like, kill, kill. And, you know, I want you to knock that guy down so he can't get back up again. And it's just, this is what we were taught in high school. I hated it. I hated it. But I did it because I was supposed to be a man.
Wow.
And I don't know how much of that still goes on in football practice. This was the 80s. This was 1980. That was 30, 40 years ago?
I've heard from people who have their kids in sports say mm-hmm. that stuff is still going on.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it's not. if I had continued with that, I would be a coach today. And if I had learned that that worked and my team got victory because I taught my team to kill and to growl, then I'd probably still be teaching my kids to do that. Mm-hmm. But what a silly thing.
Right. Wow.
I was in one play in the 11th grade. I mean, varsity football. I was on the varsity team, but only because I think it was a rule that they had to take everybody.
Oh, wow.
So in the 11th grade, I was on the varsity team, and I got into one game, and I was the cornerback. And the guy had done an end-around run, and there was nobody between me and the end zone. So if I didn't stop him, the guy was going to score. And I just remembered my training in practice. And so what I did was I just got in front of him, but because I was smaller, and I think he thought he could just run right over me. But I learned that you just get in front of him and you hit him as hard as you can and you wrap your arms around him. And where he probably could have run around me had he tried, maybe he didn't. He tried to run over me. And so I grabbed him. He smashed into me. We took a tumble, and I stopped him, and it was the one sticker I got on my helmet. The coach was so happy with the hit that I put on him, and it was such an example of how strong and masculine I was at that particular moment. I'll never forget it, and that was my last play, and after that I went out for cross country.
Oh, wow.
Instead of football, and that was the best. I should have done that so long ago.
Mm.
I should not have stuck out football, but...
Wow.
But I didn't want to disappoint people.
What were the first inklings in your head? And like, how old were you when you were like, I'm not, something isn't right here?
Five.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's my earliest memories are 4 or 5, that I was doing things that weren't appropriate for a male to do. Whether it was feminine behaviors, feminine attributes, and my dad and other people, the neighbor kids, they drill it out of you pretty quick. You're a faggot. I was a faggot, and I learned to not be a faggot. You don't want to be called a faggot.
Right.
And part of you don't want, you know, I initially there was a time I wanted longer hair, and my dad made it very clear that was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so you just learn that these, you don't cry, you don't whine about things, you do what you're told to do, and you do them in a masculine manner. There was girls' things and there were boys' things, and if you did the girls' things, you were quickly taught to not do those things through physical violence, literally. You'd get, it'd be verbal violence at first, so, I mean, I'd be called faggot by the neighbor kids, or I'd be, don't be a girl by your dad, or that's, you're too girly. And then if you didn't change at that point quickly, then they would beat you up. They would hit you, they'd tie you up and tickle you, they would tie you to pole. I mean, those things happen. So those things would happen, and you just learn. It's no fun. It's no fun getting punched. Mm-hmm. And having rocks thrown at you and bleeding. I mean, it's just, you don't want that. It's just, right. So you just don't do those things anymore. And you stop crying when things hurt, and you chin up, you know, you suck it up. So I knew it then, and I knew that I needed to become a man. And I just assumed that all the other boys were so much better at dealing with these feminine, called feminine things, which is, again, bothers me, because they shouldn't be feminine things. They're just feelings and things, as being a child and a human being. So I just thought that other boys learned to not exhibit those traits and were better at pushing it down inside themselves and covering it up and hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until about, you know, it really wasn't until even in college and even later that I realized that other boys actually didn't think that way.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I did. But I didn't learn the word transgender, or even at that time it was transsexual, which is considered an outdated term now, but back then in all the textbooks it was transsexual, all the abnormal psychology books that I read, it was called transsexual. I didn't learn about that term until I was in college and had access to the college library. I did go to the library at my high school, and there were a couple books there that also considered it a deviant behavior mm-hmm. when I would look it up, that transsexual people or people seeking a sex change, that was another term they used,
right,
were mentally ill and sexually deviant. And so when you read that and you read it about yourself, you kind of go, you know what? I'm not going to talk about this with anybody anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're just going to try to fix this
right.
by giving absolutely no clue that I have any feelings like this whatsoever. So I will do everything masculine that I can possibly do. I will try to be successful in business. I will be competitive in sports. I will be appropriately condescending to other people who exhibit feminine behavior, which is ridiculous behavior too. And so, and I will lift weights and I'll build big muscles and I'll just be the perfect man. Right. So nobody has a clue. The other thing that would happen to people at that time is they would just kill themselves. Mm-hmm. So I'm lucky that I did not take that course.
Right.
Just lucky.
Right. Well, and I think about when we talk about choices, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's like, you think about the time frame that you were growing up. This was not something that you were seeing on TV, mm-hmm. that you pulled. No. This was all going on in you, mm-hmm. that you had to suss out, not that you were going, there's even a choice here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Laura Jane Gray says something like, when she was growing up, there were two types of transgender people on TV, crazy and foolish. Either you were like taxi driver, kill it, mass murderer, or you were pitiful and you were going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
There was no strong examples of being a transgender person back in that era. And I do remember when I first heard about Renee Richards, and oh, did she suffer. She was a tennis player who transitioned.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she transitioned in the 70s, and she was vilified. And you see that, and you go, you know what? I don't need that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do everything I can to lead people to believe that I do not have this condition.
I know you had mentioned the gag me with the spoon, which I think is really the thing, is that we have this obsession with genitals.
Oh,
yeah.
It's horrible.
And add to that, we have this obsession with genitals. And then you also talked about the law in Sweden of how you define a female that mm-hmm. isn't about genitals.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the hormone mm-hmm. levels. So you can have a vagina mm-hmm. and the hormone levels that don't make mm-hmm. you female. And then what are you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just your body's production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important for our society still to... I mean, how important is it that we know what someone's genitals is? We carry around cards that indicate what our genitals are so that we can pull them out and prove it if we have to. Like, I see you're speeding. You look like you're a man, but let's see your driver's license so I can be sure. Okay, it says M. All right, you've got a penis. All right, now let's just move on to the speeding thing. Or when you're at the bank... you know, you can deposit this check, but let's see some ID so I can know exactly what genitals you have. But the other thing we do is the way we dress to symbolize what genitals we have so that you can tell someone walking down the street whether that person has a vagina or a penis, right? And so when someone's walking down the street looking like they have a vagina, but they get closer and then you think, I think they're trying to fool me, I need to beat that person up.
Well, like you say, women have less of an issue than men do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the questions that has come up is, men need this category? The category is more than women do because they need to know who they can be sexually attracted to and who not.
Yes.
And
also who gets the privilege.
Right.
We don't want people moving outside of their caste. And when you dress inappropriately or seem like you might not be in the category you are assigned at birth, suddenly you're moving outside of your case and you're trying to obtain privilege that you don't deserve.
Okay,
no, and that's when we need to start to hurt you.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So before we go, I want to know if there's anything else that you want to tell people, that just things that we should know or things that we should think about.
Well, the women, what I would speak to women is that we are put in a situation that we don't always fully appreciate about how we need to behave in order to prevent us from obtaining male privilege. And part of it is that you need to dress this way, you need to look this way, you need to behave this way. And all of those things are little clues to... other people that you are not as good as a man and don't deserve the same privileges. And I'm not suggesting that people change their behavior or their appearance. I am suggesting, though, that having this cross-cultural blending where some people get to live in another gender for a while or forever, or meeting somebody who used to be one way or thought they were, the other people thought they were one way, and now these other people see they're the other way. The person always knew they were a particular way, but seeing this person make this shift, you realize that that is not a law of nature, that men deserve the privilege and women don't. The patriarchy is the way society works the best. It's not. And women are being programmed to, and men too, I mean, we're all. We're being programmed to see people and to judge them based upon the M or the F on their driver's license or on their passport or on all the forms we fill out or the clothes that we wear or the makeup that we wear that we don't wear. All of those things are clues currently that people will use to categorize people and determine the sort of rights that they deserve. That needs to stop. And the way that it can stop best and still allow people to express themselves artistically or in a way that they want is by allowing people to move quickly and easily across borders in different cultures and in different genders. Or even doing away with the idea of gender. And I know that sounds radical. We don't need an M&F on the driver's license. We don't. Why do we have it there? It doesn't need to be there.
That is a curious thing. What is the true benefit of that?
I'll tell you the benefit. It's the benefit is that the officer, when he looks at you, can say, ah, you're a female, you deserve this treatment. Ah, you're a male, you deserve this treatment. Because I'm not going to go just on your appearance, because every once in a while we get that wrong.
Right. Well, and it wouldn't be so upsetting if it didn't have so much meaning.
Yes. No, it wouldn't be upsetting at all if it didn't have, if there wasn't that baggage of mistreatment and not listening to what somebody has to say or giving them the same platform to speak from.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I always think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I honestly don't know a whole lot about her, but mm-hmm. I look at pictures of her when she was young and pictures of her now, and I think if she came in with the long flowing hair that she had when mm-hmm. she was younger, would she be treated the same way?
Well, she's already not treated fairly because she's a woman.
Right, and, right. And but even more so. Mm-hmm.
But even more so, people, well, you know, that's a hard one. That's a whole other topic is, you know, what level of beauty does beauty and youth and how much does that give credence to what a person says?
For sure.
It's also a double-edged sword.
Mm. Okay.
And so I don't know the answer to that yet. Mm. I do know that people who are considered more attractive or meet a certain visual standard do get more opportunity usually.
I think that's very true.
And sad.
Yeah.
So gender exchange programs, just like student exchange programs, help give us an understanding of different perspectives that will hopefully make all of us more equal.
That was so fascinating. Yeah. I'd love to see that class. So how do people find you? So tell us how to find you on the web, but tell us about any events you've got coming up too.
I'm really excited about the next comedy show at Wusso's out in West Duluth, where I'll get to do 15 minutes between bands. I think that's going to be a great show. It'll probably be sold out. So if people do want to go, they should get their tickets now. I expect it'll be sold out. I have no doubt it'll be sold out. It might. I don't know how many tickets are even left now. But sign up for that. It'll be a great show. And as much as I want to encourage people to find me on Instagram or YouTube, I think what I'd really like to do is to move away from those social networks and more into my personal website, because at least then I'm not propping up that, and that's okay.
Mm.
So chaos.com is my personal website, and that's the chaos part is spelled with an X instead of a CH, so it's XAOS.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, chaos.com.
Okay. What was the inspiration for that?
For that website?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've always been into domain names, okay. And part of it's what you can get.
And so
chaos kind of seemed to fit my philosophy a little
interesting.
Bit.
Okay. That would not be what I would guess.
Well, I mean, because my comedy tends to people either really like me or they don't.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. The demographic that I do well with is usually feminist lesbians.
Okay.
That's pretty niche oriented.
And the show on the 9th, how do they find that? Or just go on the...
Good question.
Okay.
I mean, I know if you went to the WUSO website. I mean, it's November 9th. If you go to my contact page on my website, I will give you the information.
Okay. Perfect.
And if people want to sign up on my email list, I would promise not to email them more than 4 times a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's very...
That's it. Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
And I would only email them with show dates.
4 times a year? Is that enough?
It's not enough, but I think it's enough that people won't get annoyed.
Okay. That's fair.
And so they probably would miss some shows, but... And I mean, I'm almost... Every Saturday, I'm at Dublin's. And every Friday night, I'm almost always at Dublin's. And VIP Pete's and Superior on Wednesdays, and Average Joe's on Mondays. The Average Joe show starts at 8:30, give or take 5 minutes, and VIP is usually 8:30, give or take 5 minutes. The Friday night show at Dublin's is 10:30, and the pro show on Saturdays, there's 2 shows, and those sometimes sell out too. They're at 6. I get there at 6, but the show starts at 6:30, and the second show, the late show, starts at 9. So there's an early show at 6:30, a late show at 9, and if you're listening to this and you want to get in for free, send me a message. I will get you free tickets to the pro show, which is never a bad show. Always a good
nice.
Show. Always a good show.
And if somebody's listening and they're not in Duluth, because we have people who aren't in Duluth, mm-hmm.
I do get around. I perform in Florida sometimes, and I've performed in Brooklyn and Boston and North Carolina. That was a great show. I love being in North Carolina because it had the overhang of being anti-trans at that point when I was there. So the fact that they invited me was truly wonderful.
Wow.
And so I got to do like about 6 or 7 shows in North Carolina and then Seattle. I've been out in Seattle. And so I do get around occasionally, which is why you'd want to sign up for my email thing, because that's the kind of thing I would send out in emails, is that I'll be in Boston, or I'll be in New York or Brooklyn or something.
And if somebody wants to have you perform, they can contact you as well.
Yeah. If you've got a group of feminist lesbians, I'm ready. I would go anywhere as long as I don't lose too much money. I don't need to make money, but if I'm going to go somewhere like Kansas, if you could help me out with the travel expenses or something on that, I would do it. But I don't need to be paid a lot.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. This has been so much fun.
I'd love to go to Kansas. Seriously. The more...
Why Kansas?
Because it's very Republican.
Okay, so just the opportunity.
Yep, the more... I've been in Alabama once, and go where the most people are that I can. Preaching to the choir doesn't work as well.
Right. You need a little choir there, mm-hmm. to get things rolling.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine.
So, any opportunity I have to engage in constructive dialogue, because I need to learn too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind. I mean, I make mistakes. I make mistakes in. I know I've made a ton in this show right now. I know I've been very prejudiced against some Trump voters in this episode, but I want you to know that some of my best friends are Trump voters.
Yeah, well...
I have family members that are Trump voters, and we still talk.
And that's a good thing. I mean, that's where we need to figure that out, too. How do we be able to communicate, continue to communicate, and learn and connect? Mm-hmm. Because it's hard, and I get it, it's hard. It can be really hard, but yay, we got to keep trying, all of us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. This has been so much fun.
All right.
You can find Danielle at chaos.com, which is... xaos.com. Consider the event on November 9th happening at WUSO's Concert Cafe. The event itself is called Beaver Moon Comedy and Music Extravaganza, and I realize that I keep forgetting to name that. You can head to the show notes and you will find a link that gives you all of the information. And that's almost it for today. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And until next week, may you continue to find the pieces that fit beautifully and with laughter into your health and wellness puzzle.
And on that note, we'll leave you with one piece of advice.
You don't want to be killed by a bear. But you know what kills more people than bears? Cows.
Cows kill more people.